I'm here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. Once again, our focus is on the two frustrating Florida cases concerning Haley Cummings and Kaylee Anthony. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone.
I'm glad you could make it.
Yeah, I almost didn't. I was late.
She even dressed up for the show. I'm quite impressed. We will have TJ Hart joining us. However, he's going to be a little late, so expect him to be breaking in about 20 minutes. From upstate New York, we have author and crime writer Denny Griffin. Denny, it is always good to talk to you.
Well, good afternoon, Simon, Jan, and Peter. Glad to be with you today.
We were talking just before we went on air. Denny, it sounds like you are a pretty busy guy right at the moment.
I am, Simon. I got to admit, I am. Yeah, I got a lot of stuff going.
You have another Crime Wire show coming up. When is that, and what's it going to be about?
That's Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, Blog Talk Radio. And one of the things we're going to be discussing, one of the topics, is what I'm calling a success story, and it's about the disappearance and death of a former organized crime figure in the Colombo crime family, and how his son turned against the mob to help find his father's killers. And in fact, it's one of those unique cases where, thanks to the son, Billy Chiatolo's efforts, in part, they were able to indict and convict the killers before the remains were found. So
wow.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, and Billy is certainly an entertaining character.
Yes, he is, with that southern drawl.
Exactly. And also joining us today from Maine, we have investigator Peter Hyatt. Peter, how's your day going?
Very well, thank you. Glad to be here.
As always, our phone lines are open, and our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120, or you're welcome to ask your questions in our chat room. Let's start off this afternoon with an update on the Kaylee Anthony case. As I understand it, there was supposed to be a deposition of Sergeant John Allen on Friday, but that didn't happen. Wesh were reporting it was a happening deal, but didn't.
No, there was no explanation as to why it didn't happen, as far as I know. They just didn't do it. So I don't know what was going on for the reason.
Although, you know, quite honestly, what they're going to get from Sergeant Allen is beyond me. I mean, he was an investigator, but, I mean,
I don't think he's even on the case anymore, is he?
He's certainly not.
Nothing to do with it now, right?
Well, I'm not sure that he's off the case. But he was never the lead investigator.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. I don't know what the deal is with it.
In fact, the first time I heard his name was from Sean Krause. I believe it was Sergeant Allen that contacted Sean.
Oh, maybe it was. I don't know. I don't really remember.
Hmm.
That's a long time ago.
Oh yeah, ancient history in the news business. Okay. There was a court hearing this week. As I understand it, Jan, Baez is still doing his best to get the death penalty off the table.
Yes, he is. He's bound and determined that they're going to get it. I don't know if it's him or a combination between him and Lyon. I really don't know, but they really determined that they're not going to just accept what they say, what the judge has said, and they're just going to keep coming up with more and more things to go with it.
Denny, it seems to me that, you know, he's kicking a dead cat here. I don't know how many times he's brought up the death penalty, idea, both with the new judge, Judge Perry, and the original judge, Judge Strickland. And, I mean, he hasn't scored any points. You know, is he just wasting time?
Simon, I got to tell you, I've said before, if I could figure him out, because a lot of the moves this guy makes, I can't come up with logical explanations for him. You know, he presumably has some kind of strategy, and apparently this is part of it. But as far as explaining what that strategy is or how effective it might be in the future, you're right. It hasn't been effective so far, but he keeps on it. So, I don't know. I really can't explain it. I wish I could.
Peter, I know that you follow this case. What's your thoughts on why he keeps bringing the same thing to the table, and he keeps getting smacked around the head? Is there a strategy?
I don't think so. I think he is fishing in the dark, and he reminds me of a stockbroker that is churning someone's account. He's got some billable hours there that he can claim because of this, but it doesn't seem to be of any necessity. I don't think the judge is going to allow it to go on too much longer. I know they're not due back again until the 15th.
Judge Perry's not going to put up very much of it. I'm sorry if I interrupted, but I agree, Judge Perry won't put up with it.
The latest grumbling is about what's called the aggravator. To seek the death penalty, there has to be an aggravator. I know that he's, cried and whined, but the prosecution won't tell him the exact aggravator that they plan on using, but they now seem to have narrowed it down to three.
Yeah.
And they're, any one of them could be used. In fact, they could use all three. I mean, how much narrower does he want this?
I don't know, but it can be any of them. So I don't understand what difference it makes. Like I said, that all three of them is right there. Any of them is you can use in any of them.
Okay, I know that Baez. Is his job is to do everything possible in support of his client. But when do we reach the point where he is merely wasting the taxpayers' money? Because it's no longer the client that's paying, it's the taxpayer. I mean, Denny,
yes.
Should there be some sort of limit on this?
I would think. I suppose that's up to the judge primarily to decide when enough is enough, and maybe advise Mr. Baez of that he's reached that point. But you start monkeying around sometimes. I think with the defense telling them that. Shutting them down on certain things, it might be something for appeal. I don't know, but I agree. You're on the taxpayer's dime here, and I think the defense, should be a productive, positive thing, and not just a time waster or make no sense. So I would hope that someone will hold Baez accountable. And
Peter, you are a man on the taxpayer's dime. I mean, what do you think of this? I mean, should there be a point where someone says to buyers, okay, this subject is over with, it's done. You cannot bring it back up.
I think we're close to that now. I think he's exhausted just about everything. With that, we saw last week about the presentation of the 911 calls, and the prosecutor presented an excellent argument that they said the calls show how the defendant created the kidnapping story after denying there was any problem. So those three calls, especially under the fact that they're excited utterance, will be part of the evidence that will come in. And Baez can simply file motion after motion after motion in what appears to me, at least, to be a type of churning of the taxpayer dollars. But I agree with Jan that the judge is going to put a stop to it, and I think it's going to be soon. We don't have anything major, I believe, until July 15th when she's back in again. But as for now, I think that the judge is going to move this along. I don't think there'll be any more delays at all.
Well, the trial still isn't scheduled till May of next year.
Yeah, but he's put a lot of time limits on this. The judge has. He's put deadlines and stuff for him. He's not going to let him, you know, bring it out all the way into the first part of May and then come up with an excuse, say, well, we're not ready for the trial yet. He's making sure that everything is done before time, so they will be ready for it, so which should have been done a long time ago, in my opinion. But Judge Perry's, I think he's doing it pretty good. He's being pretty firm with them and not letting them get away with a lot of stuff.
Well,
I said July 15th, but there's a status hearing that Casey Anthony herself wouldn't attend. That would be, I think it's the 21st coming up.
Okay.
And that's where they'll continue to, that's when I think we'll actually hear from Judge Perry as he moves us along. I think even in the, what Jan mentioned about the time constraints that he's put on this, I think that those time constraints have extra time built in. I mean, he's had one eye on the appeal as well, and he's done a very good job with this. This is why I think that 11 months from now or so, we will be going to trial.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's take a quick call. We have someone coming in from the 518 area code. What's your name, and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, good afternoon, Simon. This is Gail from New York. I'm always interested in hearing what Peter has to say. This is just a comment and a question. I do not feel impressed by Mrs. Lyon or Mr. Foghorn Leghorn. Not one bit whatsoever. And I just feel that the prosecution is going to wipe them all over. I just can't see what Mr. Baez is trying to prove. I just don't understand it. I think he's making a fool of himself.
Oh, I agree with that one.
He's
been making a fool of himself since the beginning of this.
And, you know, another thing I've noticed is I think there's some kind of animosity to Mr. Cheney. He and Mason, I don't know, do they all get along well? I just get a feeling about it.
And it's kind of hard to tell with that one because you don't see them together too much.
The one thing I am firmly convinced of is that Baez is now realizing that getting Cheney to cause all of the trouble that got Strickland booted from the case maybe not have been the smartest move.
I'm sure that's what they have discussed already.
I think if you look at the two of them together, when they are together, I think what the caller probably is sensing is that body language from Baez. There's a disdain, I believe, between the two of them. And I think that, Simon, you're correct. I think it may have come down where Cheney Mason did not want Strickland removed and Baez continued. And I think that when you see the type of playing field, they're not in the same ballpark there. Baez is looking up to him, and he resents him, and he's out of his head, I guess the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And now the good old boy friendly mentality has been shot down. They got a new judge. Go back to the judge's history, and you see him presiding over death penalty cases. Not a good thing for Casey Anthony. I think a very bad miscue on the part of Baez, and I would be willing to guess that Baez did it against Cheney Mason's advice or pleading even.
Well, you know what brought it to my attention the most was it was last week there or whatever when they were in court, and Cheney Mason tried to help Baez out. Remember when Baez had that report or whatever, and he was going on and trying to explain it, and Mason gave him something, and he wouldn't even listen to him. He just, remember, and he said to Jeff Ashton that he would do it his way?
Yes.
So that was the feeling I got from Baez and Mason then.
But what I can't understand is why has Baez got control over it? Isn't he supposed to be? I mean, he's not supposed to be qualified to handle this as the lead attorney, is he?
No.
He's not qualified to handle a death.
Well, that's what
penalty.
We're talking about right now, though. I mean, they're going into court fighting this right now. So why is he even involved in it? He should be sitting in the back seat right now and let them do their job. That's what they were hired for. Exactly.
You know, he should be, but he hasn't. I'll tell you what, I do not think the prosecution is going to wipe up the floor with Andrea Lyon. I don't think Andrea Lyon's going to be there when the wiping up happens.
Oh.
Yeah, Simon and I talked about that, too, already. Yeah,
she likes herself a great deal, and one of the things that she does is she likes to pad that record of hers and keep that angel of death row.
Well, that's exactly what I told Simon. You know, right now she's fighting so hard to get this death penalty off, because when she came into this, she thought this was going to be an easy job, that they were just going to cut and dry. You know, she was going to get it dropped with her little flirtations with the judge and all the, and her little smiles and all that, because if you notice at the beginning, that's exactly what she tried to do. And she thought that she was going to get it and keep her little reputation that she's very, very proud of. And
but you
now
know what,
she's
the other last, not, remember a couple weeks ago there when she brought in that woman to
yeah.
for the for
yeah,
the,
yeah, the witness?
Was that a joke?
Yeah. Oh, that was a big joke. That's what I'm talking about. She was trying to come off with all these tricks, and now she's seeing that it's not going to work. So now she's worried. She's getting nervous because her little reputation that she's made such a big deal out of is in jeopardy now, because she just might not win this case as far as getting the death penalty taken out.
I was embarrassed for her.
I think that she didn't factor in one thing to this case besides the overwhelming evidence. I don't think she factored in the Jose Baez effect. I think that Jose Baez has become a thorn in her flesh. But if we have a moment, I'd like to look at something that Andrea Lyon said in court. She said, and this is a quote now, "People don't say, you know, she's a, it's an impolite word, but, you know, she's a whore, so she should die, right? They don't say that out loud. Oh, well, they do in their blogs, Your Honor." This is what her death penalty qualified attorney, Andrea Lyon, argued in court. And what I would present with that is that as Andrea Lyon is giving consideration to the words used, the statement analysis shows this is what Andrea Lyon believes about Casey Anthony. This is her opinion of her personally. She does not approve of this as a mother, as a woman, as someone who has made a reputation of being a professional in court. She looks at Casey Anthony, and she chose these words herself. In fact, she could have said anything she wanted to, but she chose these words herself. And whenever you have these type of fragmented sentences, you have a high level of tension. And this is what was going on for her. So I think this was a personal struggle for her that she really felt. She feels that Casey Anthony is a whore, the words that she used. And this is a very difficult one to defend for her, because not only does she have someone who I think she personally disapproves of, But I think that she has to deal with Jose Baez, who is all about the public relations and all about the image and not about defense of his client. So I think that Mason has a problem with Baez. I think that Andrea Lyon has a problem with Baez. And I think that Andrea Lyon has a personal disgust of Casey Anthony. I think she'll bail out before this is over.
We think so, too.
Denny,
yes.
you have friends in low places.
Yes.
Do you think it'd be worth setting up a sports book? It would be illegal.
Yeah, who's going to be left standing at the end of this? You know, we were talking yesterday, Simon, about egos being involved. I don't know.
Bingo, there's the word.
Yeah. You got Baez, who wasn't a household name in legal circles until the Anthony case. But some of these other people, the Baden Lions and some of these other folks, had more of a reputation. And it seems to me they've hooked on with this kind of what I consider kind of a loose cannon with Jose Baez. And I don't know about the financial end of it. I don't know if we'll ever know for sure who's getting paid, how much by who. But from an ego perspective, if Baez's strategy, whatever that may be, ends up with Casey taking a fall and getting the death penalty, there's going to be a lot of these people who, like you know, the Angel of Death Row and all that kind of stuff, are going to be taking a pretty good hit. So I bet you there are some nervous stomachs in that defense camp over this.
I'll bet they have a very large bottle of Tums.
You know, Baez, if we can believe one of the attorneys down there, after the retainer, if he was getting, before the Casey Anthony case, let's say, for example, $50 an hour, one of his fellow attorneys reported that they're getting on minor cases five times that now. After the retainer, maybe $250 an hour, just from the notoriety he's gained from this case. So even if he were to bail out of this thing and look like a complete fool, if he still retains his license to practice law, he's been making some serious money, and he's going to continue to make money with this.
Okay.
Who growled?
We have another caller on the line. Caller from the 724 area code. What's your question or comment for us?
Hi, this is Peggy from Pennsylvania. You may have already discussed this. I may have missed it, but didn't Chaney Mason say at one of those hearings when they were talking about the discovery of poor little Kaylee's body that he said that something like it doesn't mean that Casey didn't kill her. It just means that she didn't put her there, something like that.
I remember.
And I will. You do remember that?
Yes. Yes.
I've got to admit, I don't.
Me either. I don't remember hearing that one.
Yeah.
I thought that was such sort of strange.
In other words, are you saying that said that it doesn't mean that she put the body there?
It doesn't mean that she didn't kill her. It's just they were arguing that she didn't put the body there. And I thought that was a really, unless I misheard, which is not impossible, but.
No, I heard the same thing.
I would love for someone to email us that particular quote.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't make sense, though, because they've been saying the reason that they're trying to prove that the body wasn't there when Casey went to jail, so that meant that she couldn't have killed him.
That's what they were arguing, though.
That's what I'm saying.
He said it doesn't mean that he didn't kill her.
Yeah, unless it was a slip of the tongue.
I'm pretty sure, and I'll go back and see if I can find the transcript or the video of it, but I'm pretty sure that that's what he said, and I was just really kind of shocked that he would say that. But
a number of
us. I think that they all look very war-weary, too, the attorneys do. So I think they know I think the experienced attorneys know they've got a loser. And Baez just making money. So.
Yeah,
okay,
the imposter has changed a great deal, and I think that's what the call is recognizing. Baez is not having that swagger and that elevated chin, and his shoulders are slumped forward. His chin is generally down. His remarks to the press are not with a smile. They're usually with an embittered type of facial muscles bedding down. He's not doing well. She's correct.
Yeah, he doesn't smile as much as he used to.
Yeah, everybody looks like they've been rode hard and put away wet, and they know that they've got a long way to go. So, okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, mm-hmm. We have yet more callers. Oh, we seem to have opened up a rat's nest this afternoon. Let's take a call from area code 386. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us? Oops, we lost 386. Let's move to area code 208. What's your name and what's your question or comment?
My name's Peggy from Idaho, and I, too, just had a comment. I heard that also when Trainee Mason made that comment about the, you know, that it didn't prove that she didn't kill Kaylee, but that someone else put the body there. So that was in the hearing that was one of the series, probably the death penalty, you know, when they were going over the motions for the death penalty. I think that's when it was.
Yeah.
But I also thought it was very interesting during the budget hearing. I chuckled to myself when I heard the judge tell Jose Baez about the fact that he wasn't going to get reimbursed for hotel expenses when they took this out of town because he was one of the paid attorneys. And I wondered if anyone else remembered that and the look on his face.
Oh, I know the look on his face.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy with it, that's for sure.
It was something that he had not thought about, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I was surprised that he didn't turn around and say, I guess that means I can't forward receipts from Starbucks either.
he's putting on a comical show, and it's just a tragedy because it's such a heart-wrenching case. But his blunders are just astronomical at this point, and I agree with Jan that he's a mess. But that was my only comment, but I sure enjoy your show. Thank you so much for putting
it
on
every week. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate it.
And we do have a caller from 352 area code, and I happen to know who it is because I recognize the number. TJ, how's it going?
I'm doing as well as my phone will hold out. That's how well I'm doing. How's everyone else?
we're all doing
hi,
great.
TJ.
Hey, completely off topic.
Yeah.
I was watching what masquerades as the news channel this morning, and I understand that a tank washed up on a Florida beach, and it has BP written all over it.
Yeah, strange things are washed up all over the place, and I got to tell you, what an interesting time for that to occur.
Indeed.
You know, we're sitting here now, and everyone is well aware that that spill is huge, and that spill is nasty, and the environment is, in jeopardy, compromised, I should say. But I do want everyone to know that only a handful of small beaches out there in the Pensacola area, as far as Florida is concerned, are the only ones that have been compromised with some tar balls. We're having some tar balls down in the Keys, but it's not been, ruled, determined that they're BP's tar balls at this stage of the game. But all of the other thousands of miles of coastline here in the great state of Florida, folks, if you were thinking about taking your vacation down here, don't put it off. Everything is still fine at this stage of the game. One of the closer parts of the spill, and it's only particulate, is over 103 to 150 miles away from our Gulf shoreline. The Atlantic coastline is fine. Some of what you're going to see masquerading as the news channels on TV are selling the sensational and the ultra-dramatic. People are losing their jobs in the fishing industry. Florida has done some things to make sure that the fishermen have at least a fighting chance this year. But the hotel-motel industry, we're hoping to get through this season without the oil interfering with anything so far. Only, like I said, a handful of beaches in the Pensacola area. So if you were planning on taking a long sought-after Florida vacation, please do so. The state needs to see you. We'd sure love to treat you and spoil you rotten.
You're beginning to sound like you got part of that $25 million that BP gave to the tourism board.
No, I haven't been touched by that, but what I will tell you is that I do go out, and I cover more stories than the Haley case, and on our western edge of our coverage area is Levy County. In Levy County, we have Cedar Key. And this little community, it's a drinking community with a fishing problem. anyway, there's a $52 million clamming industry in the state of Florida. $45 million comes from this very tiny little island, and it is tiny. And we have some great people who live on our western shores of our listening area. And I go out there, I talk to these folks, and, you know, they're deeply concerned. They're deeply worried. I mean, here's... you know, centuries of a way of life, or at least a century of a way of life for many of these families out there. And it could all be changed and gone in a heartbeat, and we're trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. We're trying to make sure that these folks are still taxpayers instead of tax recipients, and that's the way they like to. They jokingly say that's the way they prefer it. They'd rather be paying some taxes as opposed to getting an unemployment check.
Okay, all right. Let's go back to our scheduled programming.
Sure. I'm sorry about that, guys. I get passionate about causes, as you know.
Okay, there is something I'd like to add. If we're going back to this subject about the Kaylee case, somebody in the chat room was wanting to know about Lee and where's he gone to, and I'm going to give my opinion on this. And I could be wrong, but I honestly think this is what's going on with him, because he's disappeared. Nobody has heard anything about Lee Anthony. I mean, I don't think I've heard anything at all about him since the cruise that he went on with his parents. But all of a sudden, he's disappeared. And I think, personally, that it could very well be because he knows that he's going to be in trouble. And I think that he was involved with placing Kaylee's body where it was found in those woods, because they're constantly saying that she was not there all this time. But I think during that memorial service that is what he meant by keeping his promise to CM, what was it he said, CMA?
Yeah.
And they tried to say that it could have been he was talking to his mother and Kaylee and Casey. I think that's what it was, because he was too choked up when he said that, and he knew he was doing what he could to help his sister to keep her out of trouble.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my opinion now. I can't say that's a fact. But, I mean, I've just heard a lot of people say this and say that, and I just want my opinion out there to let them know. We don't know. I mean, we have no idea where Lee is. I mean, we're not right there in Orlando. So it's not, we have never claimed to know everything either, by the way. Some people seem to think that we do. So that's. I just had to make that clear. I'm sorry.
Yeah, our Ouija board is broke. The 911 tapes are still up in the air. Peter, I want to ask you, why is the defense so keen on keeping these 911 tapes away from the jury?
Well, I think the prosecutor made it very clear when she said last week, I think it was, that the 911 tapes show that in the initial reporting to her mother, that there's three successive calls, and each time the calls come in, the reporting gets more serious, and that as she was not believed in her first, she's with the babysitter sort of thing, and with the nanny, it shows the guilt and the awareness of guilt that she had, and that she was fabricating this as she went along to her mother. So I think it's a very basic entry. The excited utterance comes under the law that way, and there's no way that Jose Baez will be successful in keeping that out.
Denny, the other motion that was denied was that the jail visitation logs will not be sealed. That means they're public record. I have to ask, what possible value could they have had to Baez? Why would he want the visitation logs sealed?
I don't know. I wonder if it could have anything to do with him and when he was in there and how often he was in there. I don't really know. So I don't know who came in to see his client that, or perhaps the timing of a visit or something that would he feels cause them some grief or cause harm to his defense. But I don't really know. You know, it's again, as I said earlier, I really have trouble figuring out or accounting for every move Baez makes, because a lot of it to me doesn't make sense. And Peter said earlier that he didn't know if there was a strategy, maybe just the fishing out there. So I really can't explain it. I don't know what is in those visitation logs that he thinks is going to be damaging.
Right. And Jan, you mentioned something earlier today that you felt that
another
maybe...
Another opinion of mine.
Right. Well, you do have lots of them. You know,
I honestly think that, I mean, it could possibly be, and I don't say I think it, but I'm just saying one scenario of it could be that, you know, everybody knows that the Anthonys have not been to see Casey since she's been put, since she went back to jail. And they claim, everybody, I mean, they've told the media and everybody else that they haven't because they don't want their visits taped. And they don't want the public to know anything about it. They don't want the media to make a circus out of it when they go to see her, because then they're going to be hounded about it. Or they don't want what they say to her recorded. And I think that that has something to do with it, too. I'm not. And they claimed that it was for witnesses or experts that they have to, that wants to talk to her. But that, I don't think that's a good enough reason. I think it's strictly mainly so for the family, because the family has not been up there to see her. Now, I mean, who's to say that she hasn't gotten, you know, some kind of communication between Baez when he goes in? Because I still think that that has a lot to do with his computer that he fought for so hard to get in to go in. I think that he communicates with them to her through his computer while he's there.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
I can't remember what other case was it that we heard that they were doing that. So because at first when I thought about that, everybody said they can't do it. But there was another case, I can't remember which one it was, that they did say that it was being done. So there, it definitely can be done.
Okay. Baez seems to want to take the discovery process to a new level. He effectively wants the prosecution case soup to nuts. That ain't happening. I mean, that would set a judicial precedent that no judge would buy into. Peter, have you ever heard of the prosecution handing over, you know, their hand of cards?
I think, like Denny, we're straining at the gnat trying to find that one little thing that Baez may be doing that appears to look like strategy. Normally, I would say that wanting to keep those records sealed about who is visiting, for instance, would not, because he'd not want to give away his hand. There are certain attorneys that specialize in certain areas. But in this case, it doesn't make sense anyway, the evidence being so overwhelming. And the judge simply can ask, Mr. Baez, how many of your previous clients have you denied this? How many have you denied that? How many have you done this? How many have you done that? And it becomes a problem. One concern I have, however, is that unless the judge puts a stop to the many frivolous motions, is Baez trying to build a case where he can say, I put forth 37, 38, 40 motions, and 40 were denied, and this judge has not been fair, that sort of thing? I don't know how it would look on appeal, but I do think that he is just churning and showing excuse for billing the taxpayer dollar at this point. I don't see a real strategy developing anywhere.
On 30 or 40 motions, would that be per week? I mean, that's what it seems like. So, Denny, you're now responsible for setting up the illegal bookmaking operation about, you know, which attorneys are going to last to the finish line. And my guess is Andrea Lyon. I'd give 100-1 against.
How about Mrs. Batten? Is she in this for the long haul?
No.
Well, she stuck through it all the time, but I don't know why.
Nah. She'll be gone as well. Okay. I don't want to spend all of the time on the Kaylee Anthony case. But there's one case that I do want to touch on before we move on to Haley Cummings. Joran van der Sloot, he's now claiming he will talk to a Reuben law enforcement and tell them the location of Natalie Holloway's body. Who wants to weigh in on that one?
Boy, did he have bad lawyers.
I'll go first, but TJ's going to make me laugh. So. I think in Joran's case, it does, and as you probably can guess, it makes me cringe when I hear law enforcement commentators on the media saying that Joran has lied so many times that we can't believe a single thing he says, when really we should be writing down and examining every single thing he says. He would like to go back to Aruba because there he was, the fair-haired child. There he was protected. There he was really untouchable and built into this entitlement that he has. It's not going to work. It's not going to fly. I think that he's going to receive a lot more difficulty now, and obviously even the public pressure down there is so severe that the media, and as they bring him through, the media is thronging him. The public wants to get to him. So I think he's run out of options. I think that's a desperation Hail Mary that's not going to work. And I think he's in trouble.
TJ, I've heard that Peruvian jails are even worse than the one in Putnam County.
Oh, yes, but just like a good old South America, if you've got a little bit of extra money, you actually get a cell. It's kind of like a cased system, as one would imagine. But I tell you what, their process is swift, and there's very little wiggle room, and they have a very low tolerance for BS. That means they want to get to the heart of the matter. They like to get to it quickly, and as they see it, as fairly as possible. So it's a little bit more streamlined than our justice system. And like Mr. Hyatt said, that you know, in Aruba, you know, he could walk on water. That was his ego, and he took it with him to the continent there in South America. And wow, he was in for a very big surprise. He didn't Vander Who. It's probably what they said when they arrested him. His name is Vander Who, and he had probably never been treated that way in his life.
Right,
Simon.
Yes.
Yeah, we just kick around real quick what everybody's opinion is about the FBI being criticized by some for not arresting him, that they could have arrested him and gotten him off the streets, and that perhaps this girl in Peru then would still be alive. Anybody got any thoughts on the FBI's handling of this?
That's true.
I have their statement in front of me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead.
In April of this year, the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office in Birmingham, Alabama, initiated an investigation into the allegations of criminal conduct by Joran van der Sloot related to the disappearance of Natalie Holloway in Aruba 5 years earlier. Prior to law enforcement's involvement in the situation, Vandersloot offered to provide information to an individual regarding the location of Natalie Holloway's remains and under the circumstances of her death in exchange for $250,000. The FBI-led investigation was conducted in conjunction with the Aruban authorities. The U.S. attorney filed a criminal complaint charging Vandersloot with an extortion and wire fraud on June 3, 2010. I think that when, as I look at their statement, as they're trying to distance themselves from the criticism that that Denny has raised here, is that it is very difficult to predict this type of opportunist that he is. He has that tremendous ego. He has that entitlement mentality. He's not used to hearing the word no, and this type of man is most dangerous to women who dare to say no to him. And I just don't see the correlation between the two. They were conducting their investigation. They were looking for more for him. And I think they would have got it, but this is just a terrible, unfortunate consequence and a coincidence.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if he was responsible for the death of Natalie Holloway, had he been prosecuted, he wouldn't be in a Peruvian jail today.
But that wasn't up to the FBI to prosecute, though. That was the Aruban government and his father's coverage and that sort of thing. I'm talking in terms of what Denny brought up, is where people are looking at the FBI today and seeking to cast blame that way.
Okay.
All righty. Let's take a quick call. Someone coming in from the 734 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us? Hello? Okay. I guess 734 doesn't want to talk to us. Let's move on to the Haley Cummings case. On June 8th, Misty was back in court. The trial date has been set for August 23rd, but that's very unlikely to happen because there's just a minor scheduling conflict that no one apparently bothered to mention to the judge.
Yeah. Date's been taken.
Well, how can she be in two places at the same time?
Well, I like to know how her attorney thought that he could be in two places at the same time, or the prosecutor, for that matter.
Neither one of them mentioned to the judge that the date was the same.
Okay. Now,
it's kind of par for this course for covering this case, I got to tell you. I mean, when I saw, when I got word that this happened, I'm just putting my head in my face. Just going, oh, God. Well, Florida.
Okay, now I'm sure that there is one listener that doesn't understand what's going on here. All right, so maybe we should lay it out. All right, Misty faces 8 charges of drug trafficking. There's one in St. John's County, which is the one that the trial date of August 23rd was set for, and there's 7 in Putnam County, which also happens to be August 23rd. Now, tell me if I'm wrong here, TJ. Each one of these charges carries a potential of 25 years.
Correct.
All right. Now, I have a pretty devious mind. Well, I hang out with people like you and Denny, was this a deliberate move by the attorneys?
No, because the prosecutor, I believe, is the same in this, too. They're in the same circuit. And this is just pure negligence, pure nonsense. And Fields is was pretty red faced. when this took place, and he said that he hopes to get this all sorted out, and he says that it will, and he wants to have the trial set sometime for September or October in St. John's County, so they can, you know, get things squared up for the big one in Putnam County. Now, he was, you know, if you wanted to see some red faces, those were the two to see. It's like, oh, you know, God, hit me with a brick, you know.
Okay, but just play along with it.
But it's kind of like the nonchalance that's been going on here, too. I don't know. It's been a weird relationship that Misty has had with her attorney and his attorney has had with him. He was pretty much, you know, in the pocket from day one, but she would never say that she had an attorney, but she always had the card that says, call me if you need me. So he was always going to be there for her. So, anyway, I'm sorry.
Okay, just play along with me.
Okay.
It's completely hypothetical.
All right.
She has these, you know, two problems. Well, one problem in St. John's, seven problems in Putnam. Now, as it happens, and I mean it's amazing that the it could happen even, you know, both of these cases are going to happen on the same day. Now, both of the trials have the same drop-dead date for pleading out. If you're going to plea out, is it better for her to take the Putnam deal or the St. John's deal?
Depends on the deal. You know, you're looking obviously at more time in Putnam County just due to the number of charges. And as opposed to the number of charges in St. John's, which is one.
Okay, I'll take this one stage further. Had the attorney had the memory to say, oh, we can't do it that day, the judge might have turned round and said, okay, we'll do it the week before. Now we got a big problem. She's going to cop to one plea, and now she's got no wriggle room on the seven. And that's why my mischievous mind is taking that route. All right, she can plea out to the seven, and because no one fessed up that there was a conflict of dates, all right, the one becomes pretty much irrelevant. Take the big hit first.
Yeah, I see where you're going. I do see where you're going. You also have another piece on the chessboard. Ronald's attorney, Mr. Shoemaker from St. Augustine, is also engaged in entertaining that a little bit of an offer, that's on the table for Ron to face only 15 years if he goes along with a certain plea bargain. And this, of course, would not work in Misty's favor at all. So I'm wondering if Field is seeing some of the writing on the wall here, and maybe a plea to all charges is a foregone conclusion, and not going to fight them. I mean, after all, Misty's on tape saying, look, they got it on tape, they caught us. That is on one or two of the videotapes that have been released, the jail tapes. I'm thinking that Misty is just thinking that if for some reason or another, with her ego, that, well, they won't get me for as much as they got Hope. They won't get me for as much as they're going to get Tommy. They won't do that to me. You know, maybe that's something that Fields is wrestling with, too, as we kind of go through this theory process.
Denny, does my outlandish theory hold any water in your eyes?
It could, Mr. Simon. It could. I understand where you're coming from. I hadn't thought about it previously, but I suppose it's a possibility. What you say all these charges carry potential of 25 years each?
Mm-hmm.
If you were representing Misty, if you were in field shoes, what kind of deal would you think would be a good one?
Ooh, that's a toughie.
there are no good deals in this one if you're Misty.
What,
of honey buns.
What if he could work out a deal where she taps to all the charges? Well, there are 8 of them, right? Total?
Mm-hmm.
All 8 of them, gets the 25 years on each, but an agreement that they run concurrent. With good time, what do you got to serve, a 30-year sentence in Florida to get eligible for parole? She could be out in 8 years.
Didn't know, is it 2/3 or a third?
I don't know. I thought you could become eligible. I guess it varies by state. I'm not
sure. I have to look it up.
Florida.
I have to look it up.
Well, when Fields was speaking, and he said, I this and I that, and then suddenly said, we're not in the business of giving up. That's what I think we said. We're not in the business of giving up regarding a plea. And he hasn't been terribly active, but I think that with the... with the 25, and I could be wrong about Florida, I thought it was 1/3 is cut off by good behavior, which is still a large chunk of this girl's life.
Yeah,
sure is.
So I think that she missed out on the opportunity, just the way Tommy had sunk himself with his constant changing of stories. I think Misty has lost out on any window of opportunity, and Ron has beaten them to the punch.
Hmm.
What is it, Peter? The first one in the door gets the best deal.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, and this caught me by surprise. I think that Tommy was just so inconsistent, where they reach a point where they say, the only thing consistent about Tommy is his failed polygraphs, and he's not given us concrete information. It hasn't brought anything except maybe a little bit of embarrassment as we're all down at the water together, and I think that he may have blown himself right out of the contention for a deal. It did surprise me about Ronald because, and TJ, maybe you can kind of comment on this, what I don't see is, outside of Haley, what would prosecution possibly need any deal from Ronald Cummings?
Well, you're right. They're all caught on tape. Really none for the drug situation. It appears that they're trying to follow through what's being denied publicly in print and in the broadcast medium is that these are two separate cases. However, they run parallel. They do not intersect, but they run parallel. Okay, you got, I'm seeing parallel and intersection, but my brain sees circle. It all comes together. So there's no way that that they're absolutely going to need Ronald's testimony to convict Misty on anything, unless it's has something to do with Haley down the road. You're right.
I think that they're absolutely determined to bring this to conclusion, and this goes back even with the same thing with the. In South America, with the police and prosecution with Yuron, is these folks are facing television cameras, perhaps for the first time, including international coverage. No one likes to be embarrassed, and I think the same thing goes with Florida in this case, is that they have not been happy with the 15 or 16 months that have passed now since Haley went missing, and I think that they're tired of these the bravado, the arrogance. And the way these people have stood out in public, and all the wind came out of their sails when Hope Sykes was sentenced for that tremendous sentence that she got, what appeared to me, at least from here, to be a more of a minor role in the selling. So I think if they're looking at the mandatory minimum of 25, even if they run concurrently, it's still a tremendous sentence. And I don't see Misty now at this point having anything to barter with other than giving up something to do with Ronald and Haley. And she didn't take advantage of that, and perhaps she couldn't prove that. And now it looks like Ronald has beaten them both to the punch. I still think the watershed moment was when they sentenced Hope Sykes. And
that set the tone.
And, just take all the wind out of their sails, and that's the end of that. And now we're moving towards this, what I think is going to be a conclusion, or at least a a large break in this case with what Ronald was going to offer us, because Tommy certainly isn't getting anything.
Well, Tommy is still firmly convinced that, you know, he's going to get 3 years, 36 months, but with time served, you know, he'll be out in time for Father's Day this year. I mean, it's just not happening.
No, it's not happening. And I think that the mentality of the powerful cellmate president there who's been broadcasting, you're going to get 3 years, you're going to get this, you're going to get that, I think he's lost his election. I think he's lost his popularity.
And you know, that guy says, why did you lose to me? Hell, I'm in jail too.
TJ, I mean,
yes, sir.
Can you see Tommy getting 3 years?
No, I don't see. I think he's going to face far more. He's got other charges on other crimes that he's going to face here too. I mean, this is just the first go around for him. I mean, he's got the trafficking charge. He's got a possession charge. He's got another possession charge. Beyond this, he also has an assault and battery. He's got theft of a gun, albeit from a blind neighbor. And he also burgled a home and stole a lot of household goods from a neighbor too. And now, is that a major crime? No, but it still adds up. He's not going to do any 44 months.
Dawn dishwashing soap?
Oh, yes, yeah. he was going to go wash the oily birds with it, you know?
Yeah, the original career criminal. Yeah, let's break in and steal some Dawn.
Yeah, that and a bunch of DVDs and stuff. Like I said, you know, the value on that was probably less than, $200 or whatever, you know, and you break it all down. But the fact is, it is a crime. Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, he's got the battery case and with the, I think he faces an 8 battery charge in Ratgate, or somewhere near the Ratgate incident where the fight took place and the mom got hit in the chops in the front yard of Granny's house where he was staying with Junior and Misty in Granny Sykes' house. Yeah, it's hard to keep track. You got to have a scorecard to keep track of some of this stuff.
No, you do indeed. I mean, I was discussing this with Jan. We need to just decorate our living room with large whiteboards, you know, just so we can keep up with it all.
Jeez.
the cops, once again, are very, very quiet on the Haley case. Are you hearing any rumbles, mumbles?
Locally, no. I mean, dead quiet. This is the way it was about the time, probably from June to late August, early September, June to mid-August of last year, where there wasn't a whole bunch going on, and then all hell breaks loose with the draining of the Mondex and the release of the jail letter, and what was the other thing that happened? Oh, yeah, the infamous press release that came out, and oh, by the way, we're not believing for 2 seconds Misty was home that night, so if you saw her, then please let us know. It's that kind of quiet, and when it gets that kind of quiet, you know, something stupid's about to happen, either stupid or perhaps informational. 9 times out of 10, it's been stupid, but when it's been informational, it's been pretty impactful. So it's that all calm before the storm scenario where we are right now.
Okay, where is Donna Brock in all of this?
Dead quiet.
Isn't that the truth?
Do we know which facility she's in? Is she in St. John's or Putnam?
She's in St. John's, but we've only had one release of any substance, of any visitors that she's had or telephone communiques that she's had. She might wind up being someone who might get a little bit more time than we are originally looking at in the drug charges, But I'll tell you this, she doesn't have anything to do with the disappearance of Haley. She might have some information or some carefully crafted misinformation on the whereabouts of Haley due to the time spent with the folks that she's been spending with. But as far as this, there's very little to report on. She gets visits from her attorney, and we're not given any, or it's not, none of it's been released of any substance or value, any jailhouse visits from family or friends. And I'm surprised that we've not seen her husband or whatever stage that marriage is in of her significant other in this, too.
Okay, well, one of the things that I'm noticing is that there's been a distinct slowdown on the release of DVDs, which is probably good for my blood pressure and yours. But any whiff of anything coming up in the near future?
Well, if there would have been, I think it would be next week that we would get something, and I was almost for sure I'd be getting an email saying, oh, by the way, sometime on Thursday, but I didn't get that. So perhaps there might be something cooking here for next week, but I would hate to put that seed out there and have folks, you know, anticipating that it's going to be there when factually we don't know.
Actually, the way it generally works is we get a 10-minute warning. Oh,
yeah.
We got tapes. Get down here right now.
And the thing is that our good friends at WJXT Channel 4 are like 15, 20 minutes up the road. And, you know, that, and it's a quick trip for them, you know, down to A1A. You know, all they have to do is hang a left or hang a right, and they're in the sheriff's office at the jail. Us, on the other hand, it's 70 miles one way and 70 miles back. And it's a little bit something else. We can't transfer these electronically, folks, like that. Like you would with sound, and I think if some of the frustration that has come with a lot of people is that, you know, well, why can't you just put them up instantaneously? Well, there's a reason why Nancy Grace doesn't get those until Monday or Tuesday after they've been released on a Thursday. It's because they have to be reformatted, and then they are sent via satellite to Atlanta. Yeah, and we don't do satellite. But we basically have a courier take care of it, and we try to break these down into files that can be used for the internet, so that we can give them to our viewers and readers.
Peter, where do we have to go next to find Haley Cummings?
I think the solution is coming, and it's going to be through one of the plea bargains, and perhaps it will be through Ronald. You notice now that Grandma Hollers has disappeared, and the family who had been kind of dipping their toe in the water have found that the waters sometimes are full of sharks out there, and they've backed away. But I think that has really more to do with the generational dysfunction, and they seem to turn on each other. That's a shame, because that was a conduit of information, even if it was faulty, at least it was information coming out. And so I think without that, Simon, we're going to have to wait upon one of the attorneys stepping forward, and there'll be some information coming out, especially as Ronald steps forward. So although I had been hoping for June, the court dates get put back a bit, so I'm still banking on the summer at least, but we'll see.
I have a question for the panel. Has anyone heard from Peter Brown?
Stephen Brown, isn't it?
Stephen Brown, yes. Yes.
I was just asking about him yesterday.
I do have his number, and the last time I spoke to him, he said, I'll willingly do an interview, but after an arrest has been made. Yeah, take that for what what it is.
Okay.
But
well, his release on his statement, as I mentioned before, with the attorney, and this is very common, when I begin to make a statement and I'm very confident and I go and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and then we're going to accomplish this, and then when I jump from I to we, it's a lessening of ownership. I need to spread out the responsibility somewhat. Hank Croslin did it recently when he finally spoke to the press after how long not to speak to the press. He said, I know my daughter and son didn't hurt Haley. My heart goes out to Haley's parents, Ronald and all of them. I don't know what happened that day. I still don't know what happened. And then he went on to say, they think that, let me get the exact quote for you. They didn't hurt that baby. That's the only one thing I can tell you. Neither one of them has the heart to do that. It's like the whole world has condemned us, and we didn't do nothing, was his words. When someone goes from the first person singular to the plural, it's a weakening of that assertion. And we can see that wherever it takes place in any statement, but especially here, as we find the family, I'll go back to the investigator that came out forward. He had made some very, very definitive type of statements that it made it seem like this was imminent and we were going to have an arrest and we were all going to be surprised. And then I noticed in his speaking, at least what I saw, was that he backed away, he buttressed it with the we. It was, I felt a little bit of an exhale of disappointment because I thought maybe this is not going to be quite as strong as it can be. What I'd like to see is, and I don't see why he wouldn't go before the press and why he wouldn't tell what he knows. Perhaps if the feet dragging continues, then maybe someone will come forward and want to say something. I don't know if he's working with law enforcement down there or if he's more of a difficulty for them, but I would like to hear something from him.
Did
that kill the rumor?
No, I agree with you. And to answer you, TJ, because you brought up the gentleman's name, I am going to do a reach out to him tomorrow. I will say this, that when I first contacted him, and it was through an anonymous source, one of my sources, he almost fell off his chair in shock. He didn't want his name out there and pushed me pretty damn hard about where I had got his name and, more importantly, his number from. So I just said, one of my sources. let's go out to the phone lines. We have someone from the 734 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, Simon. This is Debbie. I'm sorry I did a TJ Hart on you earlier when I missed it before.
You did a TJ.
I did. I have two things. And, Jan, I think you're great, and I just love listening to you. But
Thank
I
you.
Have an issue with you. Those
yeah.
Croslin parents. Honey, you know, Missy
hey,
and Ron.
Again, I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Those Croslin parents. Now, Misty and Ron were only together for 4 months, so they probably don't have any pictures to sell. And I just
no,
recently,
you're right about that.
And I just recently saw some tapes that Simon has on BNN, where Tommy's complaining that they're not picking up the phone because. For weeks, it had been 3 weeks, because they're probably high. You know, and the whole thing with getting your kids to school, believe me, I have 4 kids. Thank God they are grown, but they do make their own decisions. But when Misty stops going to school in the sixth grade, you can believe you me. She would be dragged by something, and her butt would be there, and I'd be sitting next to her. And you know what? My son, when he was younger, failed to do his classwork in fourth grade, and I went to school with him, and I only had to go every day for 3 days because the embarrassment of me sitting there next to him was so awful that he got with the program. You know, as parents, you have to think, are you going to do what's easiest for you or what's best for them? So I don't know. I would love to give these people some benefit of the doubt. But when I look at the facts, I just can't do it.
Hey,
okay,
Simon, you know who I'd love to interview? I'm sorry, I would love to have a short interview with Misty Croslin's kindergarten teacher. Just to give me 15 or 20 minutes to ask a few questions about how, what kind of cooperation she got from the parents and what her life was like. I think it would tell quite a story.
The woman's probably still recovering.
Whenever I said something about pictures, I wasn't talking about of Haley. I was talking about of Misty whenever she was young. You know how they come out with everybody's pictures? Maybe that's what more or less that I was talking about, that they could have dug up pictures of Misty and tried to sell them to make money. Anything to make a dollar was what I was talking about.
Oh, because, you know, I think that they probably will do that once Misty is convicted and there's some Dateline story or the Today Show is doing some dossier on her life. But right now, who really wants to see? I mean, she looks 10 years old now. How different could she have looked back then?
She sure looks like she's aged a lot, though, since she's been in jail.
Well, you know what? She's eating food now and not pills.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right.
She looks a lot older now than what she did when they first put her behind bars.
And, you know, she's gaining
some serious weight, too.
Right.
Yeah, I just have one quick question. Does anybody know if the grandma who delivered the clothes, who claimed to see the kids at 7 that evening, did she take a polygraph? Do we know if that's
grandma
even true?
Grandma Sykes.
I don't know that Grandmother Sykes did take a polygraph. I'm not aware that she did.
And it seems to me that the entire family seems to be, have a bit of an aversion to polygraphs. They just don't seem to work.
We didn't get a clear answer from Grandma Sykes about whether she saw the children or she dropped off the clothing. We do know that she dropped off clothing and she refused to do any laundry except for the two children. She wouldn't do Misty and Ronald's, which by implication means that they're, you know, the neglect of that aspect. But at least I did not hear a clear response about whether she laid eyes on.
I thought she said
she just
they
went
were
to the
on the porch eating.
Yeah.
And they were on the porch eating dinner or eating a meal.
Yeah, that's what I thought she said. Mm-hmm. That's where they when she drove up, they were both on the porch eating their dinner. So.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry about pulling that TJ thing earlier.
That's okay.
Yeah, TJ's pretty sorry for setting the precedent, to be quite honest with you.
Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Denny, you've been very, very quiet. And I know that you just sit there and listen and process the information. What's your thoughts? Where can we take this case next? Or not we. Where should law enforcement take this case next?
Oh, I think I'm in agreement with Peter on this. When these drug arrests were first announced, I think the majority opinion was that those arrests could lead to a resolution of the Haley situation. And it's taken longer than I thought. And in fact, I think TJ mentioned at the time that it might produce results, but he didn't anticipate it would be overnight, and he was right. It's taken longer than I thought, but I was always under the impression and felt optimistic that once these people were all behind bars and facing some heavy time, there would be somebody scampering to the prosecutor's office trying to get a deal. Now it appears that perhaps Ronald was the first one in the door, because it's been mentioned that they probably don't need much from him regarding the drug charges. So, you know, what else is out there that he can help them with? But I really share Peter's opinion. I think that the arrests were it, and I think we're on the way to that now. In other words, I think everything's in place, and the wheels are turning. So I'm hoping that it's just a matter of getting everything out there, and this is going to be. I still don't think it's going to be a happy conclusion, but at least an explanation of what happened to Haley.
You know, I'm in absolute agreement with you, and this is where Jan and I have a little bit of a falling out. I know that Jan still holds on to the idea that the little girl is alive.
Yes, I do.
And why? How?
It's just a gut feeling, and the way that I think it different possibilities, that's all. I'm not ready to face the fact that she's not here, and I'm not ready to give up on the possibilities of someone else taking her, that they're not investigating, that they have not investigated throughout this whole thing. So.
Oh, okay. Let's go through these. And TJ, you have a pretty compendious mind. Cousin Joe. I mean,
Cousin Joe, perfect foil. I still think that I have a lot of lingering suspicion with this cat's involvement in some way, shape, or form. He just seems to be the kind of odd, quirky guy that may fit a certain profile. Unscientifically, I'm not a profiler, nor have I spoken to one. So, but he fits a dynamic that says that he could be very much involved with this. But there are still other elements that are out there that involve some of the drug heads, and a few of the drug heads that have not been mentioned yet. And I don't have a good enough lawyer to go naming names today, but there are. Well, you know what I mean. You know, I'm not going to go out there and say something without a whole bunch of concrete evidence and cause a lot of pain for a lot of people, namely my employer. But the thing is, there are some players out there who are bringing in the Christmas presents, as it were, as far as drugs, shortly before this all took place, and not everybody had their money ready, and there are a lot of things that have not been cleared up on that end, and also with the release of a very dangerous person, a very well-known person who doesn't play right. He's violent. Who's in this mix as well, that took place at about this time too. And you know, until I can connect the dots further there, I still believe that there is that aspect that needs to be examined, and maybe this is where the two things start to intersect as far as who was the supplier. You know, was it Donna Brock, or was it some of these other people that needed to be paid off in order to perhaps get Haley back, if indeed she's still alive, if we operate on that theory, or to make sure that nobody else gets hurt if we operate on that theory as well. So
okay,
there's a whole cloudy different direction going on there, too.
All right, so essentially, I see Cousin Joe as just too convenient an excuse.
Perfect
foil. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, how about the Sheffields? I mean, They did have an axe to grind, although, you know, it's a bit of a stretch of the imagination, you know, why they would opt to take Haley and not both of the children.
Why is it? Why you say that? Why are they not? Why is it that nobody wants to think that they could possibly do this?
They had motive and opportunity, and I think Jan is onto something there, too, because, you know, although the police aren't saying anything or pointing at any fingers in that direction, I mean, there's some stuff right there that, I mean, everybody, there's the point at anybody to be a suspect, really, but Crystal at the time was very much behind in her child support payments. She wasn't getting any help. She didn't have the money in order to pay for them, and it was really getting to be a critical time at that point for her financially. Also, you know, she's living with a very nasty little ink stain on the records that says, you know, you're the mom, but you can't keep your kids. And, you know, that's embarrassing. So it would be logical for somebody to deduce that there may have been a motive there for a disappearance.
Somebody, they say, okay, well, she's not in the good hands with Ron, and she wouldn't be in the good hands of Crystal either, so we're going to take care of it. And they can't do it legally because maybe Crystal would have refused, or Ronald would have refused to give Ann Haley over. There's so many different things that people haven't even given any thought to in this.
The Good Samaritan abduction, as you're referring to, yeah.
I mean, not only that, like I said, too, but all right, just say with Crystal's family, the Sheffields, just for instance. I mean, who's to say? Now, I'm not going to say Crystal did it herself, because honestly,
no.
I don't think Crystal wanted custody of her, because, I mean, it was obvious she didn't. When she did have her, she wouldn't even get up and go take Haley to the doctor when she had appointments. She didn't think it was important enough. She didn't think it was important enough for her to find out anything, any kind of activities or anything about Haley's school, where she went to school, how what time she went, what time she got out. It was obvious that she didn't know any of that. If it was my daughter, I would, and I don't care how far away I was. I was 2,000 miles away from my son, and I knew what time he got out of school in the afternoon. So, I mean, it was kind of obvious, but I do believe that somebody else could have done it on her behalf, maybe without her even knowing it.
I understand what you're saying. You know, unbeknownst to them, they figured that they were going to try to even a score.
Just try to get Haley away from the environment she was in, and people were saying, well, okay, well, she was sick, that she needed that nebulizer or whatever you call that thing that does.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, but there's places. I mean, if you've got anybody that's in the medical field, they know how to get medication. They know how, I mean, they can do it without any questions asked, and I know this is possible because I've seen it happen before. I know people, not my family, but I have seen neighbors, I've had a neighbor that was a nurse that could get all kind of medication for her family to keep them from having to go to a doctor. So it's not impossible. People are saying that it would be impossible for Haley to be surviving without a doctor. That's not true.
Isn't there a sort of nurse person in the Luce family?
Yeah, there is, but I don't remember which one is it called.
Lindsay.
Oh, yeah, Lindsay is. Yeah, but there's also medical family on the other side, too, though. So, I mean, you can't point one side to the other. It can be either way. So, I mean, and it doesn't have to be immediate family right there in Florida. It could be in another state, family member that's in the medical field that can or that has connections to be able to get to it.
Okay, Denny.
Yes.
Do you buy any of this, that maybe the right culprits aren't behind bars?
Well, as Jane said, anything's possible. So I just on my list of possible scenarios. The TJ called Good Samaritan abduction is not high on my list. I think the odds are. I hope Jane's right, but I think the odds are against it. It is
very. I mean, I'm not saying that this is exactly what happened, but what I'm saying is I can't rule it out, and I refuse to rule it out until we know the truth. I mean, until there's some kind of proof that this baby is dead, I am not going to give up on the fact. Because there's so many other things that could possibly have happened.
Peter, do you think the right people are behind bars?
I do, and it begins with the 911 call. The 911 call was deceptive, it tests deceptive, clearly. It is staged, and so if there are any drug dealings that went on that are related to this, then I would see a cooperation between Misty and the drug dealers, Misty, Ron, and the drug dealers. Starting with that call, or if it was the Sheffield family, Misty would have to be cooperating with them because Misty is the one that made that call. Misty is the one that's being deceptive. Misty is the one that, rather than reporting a missing child, is persuading hearers, the law enforcement, that she was sleeping and that someone entered that house. This is not a report of a missing child. Then we have the behavior of Ronald, which is obviously very... very suspicious. We have Tommy placing himself at the crime scene, which I believe he was. What I think about Cousin Joe is that I think that TJ is correct in the sense of his character doesn't need a professional profile. He's trouble. My thinking is that he had something to do with after the fact, or now guilty knowledge after the fact. I don't think that he initially harmed Haley. I think that's a different thing, but he may be involved afterwards.
Okay, I do need just break in very briefly. To our live listeners, you're about to lose the live feed, but the recording will be in total, and I'll have it available as soon as the show ends. On that note, TJ, I want to ask your final thoughts for today.
Mm-hmm. Our final thoughts for today, let's see how this plays out over the next month here with the possible plea deals, and let's see what goes on in the courtroom. Also, keep your eyes and ears open for perhaps players that you've not heard of before to make perhaps an appearance. Anything is possible. I'm not saying that I have any particular knowledge of this or any concrete information of this, but one sometimes has to work with a hunch. It's highly unscientific. But my hunch is that you might be hearing one or two more names pop up involving Haley here in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
My hunch is that I'm going to be annoying Steve Brown in the morning.
I hope he's feeling good.
You've warned him, now he won't answer the phone.
Oh, yeah. And Steve and I get along fine. Yeah, he'll go, "Who? Oh, shit." Denny, your thoughts on today's program?
Well, I thought we covered a lot of bases and facts. I mean, I got to say, three of the cases that have most pushed my buttons are Haley, Kaylee, and Natalie. And we got into all three of them today, so it was a very good show, I think, and I think to echo TJ, I think we just got to, you know, again, have some patience and see what shakes out of these deals that are going on, plea bargains or potential plea bargains. And I'm really optimistic that whether it's a few weeks or a few months, that these will eventually, or one of these deals will eventually lead to the resolution.
I do hope so. Peter, your thoughts?
I agree with everyone here. I think that I'll change my word from conclusion to explanation, because conclusion would really be the court adjudicating this case. But I think we will get some answers, and I think our answers are coming soon. If there's court delays, there's court delays, and we need to be patient about it. But it'll be interesting to see what comes up for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
I want to thank everyone for... Oh, no, I'm sorry. I almost forgot my wife. I mean, she'd take me out back and beat me.
Okay, you want my final thoughts. All right. I hope I'm right. I'm not going to say I am, but I hope I'm right, because I want so desperately for this little girl to be brought home. But either way, I wish it would end. I wish it would all be over with and settled, and either she come home or found, one or the other. And I keep saying in my prayers every night for that. So that's whichever way it goes, I wish that she would come home.
What I see is that the most likely culprits are behind bars, not charged with any crime against Haley, but they are charged with crimes, and they're all looking at serious time, and I feel a certain vindication, if you will. You know, Haley is getting just a little piece of justice. It's not what she deserves, but at least they are locked up. I want to thank everyone that took part in today's program. TJ Hart, who I think his battery just died. Peter Hyatt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Denny, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Simon.
We class you as the brain trust.
Thank you, Simon. I appreciate it.
Thank you both for being with us.
Okay. I'm sure we'll be doing this again next week. Till then, this is Simon and Jen Barrett wishing everyone a great week, and let's talk again soon. Goodbye.
Bye.